Well, here at The Takeaway, we are working through our summer reading list. I'm reading my way through it, but we're still taking suggestions on what are great summer books from our listeners. You can call 8778-MY-TAKE with yours.
This is Beth from Charleston, South Carolina. My husband actually brought the book Undateable home to me from the library the other day, and I laughed so hard. Tears are rolling down my face. It's all about things that men do that make them undateable, and it's a hysterical, perfect summer read.
Calypso from Oklahoma wrote to our website, and he recommended a romance-slash-mystery novel called Paper Towns by John Green. You can help create the summer reading list, too. Go to thetakeaway.org with your suggestions. But this week, we've got a book that really defies labels. It's part thriller, part epic, part coming of age, part vampire novel, but really, this is not a vampire book. I just want to say that at the outset.
It's really big, though.
It is long. Justin Cronin's new book, The Passage, is an apocalyptic story. It's about a virus that is intended to save mankind, but it ends up, of course, almost destroying it. A top-secret government experiment goes horribly wrong, as they are wont to do, and the world is then creeping, crawling with virals. It's a kind of vampire. Eventually, the reader gets totally engulfed in this struggle of this small colony of humans. They're not sure if they're the last humans left on the planet, but they're fighting to survive. Justin Cronin joins us from our sister station, WGBH, in Boston. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
You know, I've had the hardest time with this book, not reading it, which was very enjoyable, but trying to explain it to other people. Because everyone thinks it's a vampire novel, and I totally resist that. The closest comparison I've come up with was the Stephen King novel, The Stand. And I'm wondering, how do you classify it when people ask you what it's about?
Well, yeah, it's actually very difficult because I sort of set out to write a book that was in about 15 categories at the same time that had anything I ever really enjoyed in a novel in it. I really sort of set out, I mean, strangely, it's a book about the end of the world, but I actually set out to write it to have a good time, thinking that if I enjoyed writing it, the reader would enjoy reading it. The term that I have recently heard, though, through Twitter and in this age of quickly invented language, I sort of like this. It's vampocalypse.
That's kind of nice, yeah.
Yeah.
Vamstopian, I guess.
You know, any time someone's going to say the word vampire, though, it's going to bring up comparisons to Twilight or something like that, which is totally not fitting. The inspiration for your book, I understand, came from your daughter Iris, who was in third grade at the time. And you've said that you used to go on runs and she'd ride along with you and you'd talk about ideas for books. And she wanted you to write a book about a girl who saved the world.
Yeah, I think she came to me and she was a little concerned that I was maybe not living up to my potential as a writer, which I thought was very thoughtful of her. She basically dared me to write this book. And I, you know, when she said write a story about a girl who saves the world, of course, my heart sank a little bit. That seemed a little ambitious to me. I thought maybe the girl who saves Connecticut would perhaps be about the right size for a first time out. But
why save Connecticut, though? You know,
well, just you know, no. Yeah, exactly. You know, something smaller. You know,
and, Rhode Island, maybe a good start.
Rhode Island, yeah, little roadie. I basically took it up as a dare to impress a girl. It just happened to be my 9-year-old.
But she also gave you little instructions. I mean, precocious daughter said she wanted there to be a smart boy inside this little struggling colony, right?
Yeah, no, we worked together on this for about 3 months. Every afternoon after school, I'd sort of pick her up wearing my running shoes and my I'd bring her bicycle and we'd go out for about an hour. And we just played a game. It was just to pass the time, have some fun, which was let's plan a novel together. I think I was just introducing my kid to the family business as much as anything else. I had no intention of actually writing a book, and I didn't take any notes. And we just, you know, sort of floated around my Houston neighborhood for an hour every afternoon. And the thing just kind of piled up and eventually became something I couldn't ignore.
Maybe she deserves a byline, Justin. You know,
well, I did buy her a pony, so I get to go to dad heaven.
So how long did it take you to write this book?
The glib answer is 47 years, but the true answer is probably about 3. It was, you know, every book kind of happens in stages, and there was probably about a year of throat clearing and planning and kind of getting my head around it and pushing aside other things.
Okay.
But then probably about 3 years in the chair.
Because I have to think that, I mean, I have to assume that at some point you got completely involved in this novel. I mean, it's very long, mm-hmm. and it's really good, and it seems like you at some point decided to really invest in it. But it is not your typical story of a girl saving the world. I mean, it's extremely, in some places, quite dark. It's very serious. It's very atypical. And I can't imagine it's entirely what your daughter expected when she came up with the idea.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, when we just sort of chatted about the book and threw out ideas and built a plot, it was sort of in the abstract. It was when I actually sat down to write it that I, when you give a book a voice, you realize what the story actually is, and you realize the kinds of emotions that have and feelings about the world that have led you to write the book. And I discovered very quickly, of course, that it was quite a dark story. Certainly nothing for a 9-year-old. Although she's 13 now, which is the new 30, and she has read the book, and it's certainly okay for her at this age. Oh well, you know, she's my kid. She said she loved it, but I believe her. she's read it twice, which is how she reads and how a lot of young people read when they read a book, they really want to read it. They really want to be inside the story, and so they'll read it more than once. And when I came back, I'm on tour now, and I came back from the last leg of the tour. And she told me she'd read it again, so that was kind of the highest compliment.
I got to ask you, and this isn't very much of a spoiler, because you find out this out quite early in the novel, Justin Cronin, the girl character doesn't age. Mm-hmm. Was that a secret, subconscious desire for your own kid?
You know, that's very astute. It's only after you write a book that you'd sometimes look back over it and see, you know, what was really operating in your mind. And it's really very much a story about a father and a daughter. That's kind of its emotional backbone.
Yeah.
Really the story of this little girl and the man who becomes her surrogate father. And of course it would be. It was a father and a daughter having a talk, you know, that produced the story. And sure, I bet you in some ways I just wanted to keep my little girl little. I think maybe every parent feels that way. It all happens way too fast.
You are a Penn Hemingway Award winner. You wrote a novel, Mary O'Neill. I can't imagine when you were in school studying literature, when you're teaching others, or when you're writing your Penn Hemingway Award winner, that this was the kind of novel you thought that you would write. Did you get caught up in what other people might think was a commercial success?
I never really worried about that. I've never really worried about success at all. I mean, I think if you're a writer, success is just this kind of elusive, distant hope. I mean, you have to just get up every morning and go to your work and just write the book that asks you to write it. And I've really maintained that as sort of my working philosophy. It is a different kind of book. I mean, it would be disingenuous for me to say that it isn't. But I do feel at its heart, this is clearly a book by me. I mean, the things that really obsess me and occupy my mind as a writer and as a person are still very much at its core. It's really a book about people. I mean, it has this large, extravagant setting, but it's really about the relationships between the people. You want to write a book about the end of the world, you're really writing about what is savable about us, you know, what's worth saving. And that, of course, is the characters and the quality of the characters.
What did your daughter name the pony?
His name is Teddy.
The book is
called... That's his barn name.
Yeah.
That's his barn name. He actually has a long, elaborate name, all horses do, but Teddy is his street name.
Well, the book is called The Passage. It is, to my mind, a perfect summer read, and the author is Justin Cronin. He joined us from Boston. If you're a Passage fan or if you have your own book recommendation, head to our site, thetakeaway.org, and give us your suggestions. Justin Cronin, author of The Passage, any summer book recommendations?
Sure, I got about 50. Top of my list right now would be Jennifer Egan's A Visit from the Goon Squad.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, cool.
Thanks a lot.
She might be on the show, actually, coming up later in the summer.